Hello, and welcome to You Will See, a podcast from a foster, adopted, and biological mom. I'm your host, Maisha Murray. I know it's been pretty much forever since I got an episode out, and I'm really sorry about that. I feel like I have been really blocked in what I want to say lately, and on top of that, my husband and I are both doing full-time school at the same time, and then he has a job, and I got a job. Mine's just a small part-time job, but it's still a job, and then I also have another part-time thing going on with my church right now, and I'm just doing a lot of stuff. I'm not really doing this to get paid or to get anything out of it. I'm just trying to get some concepts and things out there, so I understand that I probably lost a lot of followers because I haven't been putting things out, but I'm hoping that you will be patient with me because I do have a really busy life, and I'm doing the best that I can. I received some emails from some of you and some messages on Facebook, and I am so grateful to anybody who sends in messages. I wanted to talk about this one that was sent in. She asked that I kind of start from the basics because she's a little bit lost on some of the things that I've been talking about, and I kind of understand that. Probably should have filled in the basics first. So if anybody out there is looking for information on how to become a foster parent, you can usually look that up. There should be a state website. If you just Google, how do I become a foster parent, they'll give you information that's state specific. Every state is different, so every state has different requirements and different things that you have to do to become a foster parent. Usually they're somewhat the same, like there's usually a certain amount of training you have to take. The training classes are usually in person, but they might have gone to virtual because of coronavirus. So this might be a great time to get trained because you might not have to go all the way in and spend that time driving to get there. There were several agencies that had classes that were 45 minutes or more away when we were doing our training classes, and that's why we ended up choosing our agency that we had, was because they had classes that were close and they were also willing to work with military because they understood that sometimes my husband would not be able to make it to every class. They left that to me to kind of fill him in and teach him what we had learned that day. And I actually really enjoyed the classes. There was something that I looked forward to every week because it gave us the opportunity to prepare and learn more about fostering. It also gave us the opportunity to meet other foster parents, which was really useful. And on top of that, it was like the first time that me and my husband had really gotten to go somewhere and do something on our own because we weren't able to bring children. So we had this excuse to get babysitters and leave our kids somewhere so that we could go to these foster parenting classes. It was almost like a date night. It was kind of nice. But look up your state's requirements. This might vary. Where I am in Utah right now, they don't have agencies, so you have to go through DCS. I think that's who you go through. I don't know. I haven't done this in Utah, so I don't know. But they don't have agencies here. In lots of other states, however, they have specific agencies, and the difference there is that agencies are supposed to give you a lot more support from their caseworkers. They have a smaller caseload. They can focus on you. Caseworkers can get overloaded very quickly, and it can be hard for them to ever stay in touch with you. So if you need them, it might be days before they get back to you, and sometimes you need them immediately. So agencies are kind of nice that way. They usually have someone on call where you can contact them if anything happens. But DCS is a little bit better if you want younger children. Most agencies work with older kids, teenagers, kids with disabilities, and kids that are higher leveled, meaning that they require more care. And I'll explain levels too. So with my agency, there was levels 1 through 4. And the levels don't necessarily mean that a kid is worse than another kid. I hope it's not phrased that way, because they're not worse, they're just different and they need different support. The level 1 kid usually means that they're new to the system. You don't necessarily know what their behaviors are going to be. They generally go through DCS first. So DCS is level 1 kids most of the time. And then level 2 kids are kids who have been in a little bit longer. You kind of know some of their behaviors. They don't really have any behaviors that are really difficult. They still have trauma. Every kid in foster care has behaviors, but for the most part, they're easier to work with. They don't require maybe psychiatric appointments, things like that. Actually, I think a level 2 kid, no, I think it was level 3. Sorry, I can't remember for sure. One requires meds. I can't remember if that's level 2 or level 3. That means that they have to have meds and they have to have therapy multiple times a week. I'm pretty sure that's level 3. And then a level 3 might also mean that they have more court dates, they've been through more homes, things like that. and they might have more extreme behaviors that require more attention. And then level four is usually the kids that require medical care, meaning that they have a disability that's wrong with them. They might not be able to be in a house with stairs. They might not be able to see. Some kids are blind, some kids are deaf, some kids are suffering from mental illness, some kids are suffering from physical disabilities, such as we had a kid that had cerebral palsy that came to us for a weekend once, and that was less severe. That one was a lot more manageable, like we could have stairs. There's a lot more severe disabilities that might require a wheelchair that fit into the category four. So with agencies will usually have kids level 2 through 4, and their job is to find these therapeutic foster homes that can take these higher level kids. Level 1 doesn't mean that they won't have those things. It just usually means that they haven't figured out what is going to happen with that kid yet. Agencies are generally older kids because they're trying to place the harder kids that generally people said no to first, and then they get traded off to agencies where they find a home. So there are pluses and minuses with going with agencies. If you're accepting teens, you can still go with DCS and you'll still get teen placements. It just means that if you go through an agency, you most likely will not get younger placements unless they have a disability or something is wrong to an extent where a foster parent without a lot more training can't take them. So with an agency, you're generally a therapeutic foster home, which means that you have more training and you should expect to have a little bit of a harder time. Although it's honestly all hard. Maybe that's how it's supposed to be, but it's not how it always is. So I wouldn't count on that. We went with an agency when we started. We ended up not liking that agency very much. They didn't offer the support that they kind of promised at first, and that's probably how it is across the board, but I just didn't know that or understand that at the time. The thing that I didn't like about them most was just that they were very inconsistent, and they would make lots of promises to the kids, or they would say, if you do this again, this is the consequence that's going to happen, and it would be a consequence from them, and then they would do that thing again, and they would just be like, oh, well, sorry, instead of being like, well, I told you that this is what was going to happen, so this is what's going to happen. They were constantly undermining my authority as a parent. They didn't value my input. They did not want to hear my perspective. They just wanted to kind of shift the kid through the system and get him out, and it was harming him a lot. And so that was a really difficult time. I had to fight for him constantly, and it was just really hard to establish any kind of consequences, because as a foster parent, something that you need to understand is that you are not the guardian of these kids. So you don't have the legal authority to do very much at all. You can't enroll them in school. I think in every state you're not allowed to homeschool. I could be wrong about that, but for the most part I've heard that you can't homeschool. You can't change their school. They have to go to the local public school most of the time. Sometimes they want you to take them farther to their original public school, and that makes sense so that they can stay with friends. You don't want to separate them from everything that they know. Something familiar is really helpful. And if they're safe to do that, it's a really good thing to do. I know it's a burden on the foster parent, but it has to be about what's best for the kids. The foster parents aren't allowed to change their insurance. They're not allowed to change their primary care provider. They usually have state insurance, which can be a pain because it sometimes means driving an hour to get to a doctor's appointment. And with doctor's appointments, you usually have to get those approved by a caseworker. Any kind of medical decisions have to be approved by a caseworker unless the kid is past a certain age, and that depends on the state as well. All these things kind of vary, and that's why I recommend looking up information in your state specifically. Would be a great idea to contact a caseworker from your state or contact the DCS website they have for recruiting foster parents. They'll be so happy to answer your questions. They probably will try to talk you into becoming a foster parent because that's their job and they're desperate. They will answer your questions as well. So you can kind of figure those things out. I wanted to talk about a little bit more of the basics of foster parenting before I move on to other concepts. And I do have those interviews and things that I will get to, I promise. I'm sorry, I'm gonna have to slow down for a little while. I'm just very, very busy. One day I'll be done with school, and then I won't have to worry about that anymore. But for now, I have to juggle all these things. So in fact, right now I'm doing this with wet hair because I just jumped out of the shower and I was like, you know what? I'm just going to do this podcast because if I don't do it right now, it's never going to get done. And I'm sorry if I have background noises and if this is unprofessional, I'm sorry. This is just the best that I can do right now. Please bear with me. Okay, anyway, that was a little off topic. Some other basics of becoming a foster parent are... there are some things that you would want to know about the process as far as what kinds of things they're going to ask you. You have to go through, they kind of vet you. They make sure that you're a safe family. They invade your life for a little while. Caseworkers can just kind of come and go as they want. You don't necessarily have to let them in, but it's good to let them in so that they know that the kid is safe and that your home is safe. So you definitely have to make some lifestyle changes to some extent. If you're the type of person that's worried about how people interpret your messy house, you might have to start cleaning up a little bit more often and making sure your house is clean. If you're not really worried about that, honestly, they're not worried about that. There's things like dirty diapers that have been sitting out for 3 days, yeah, they'll flag you on that and you might lose your kids. But they're not going to take away the kids if your house is dusty. They're not going to take away the kids if your house is messy, like if there's toys all over the floor, if you have laundry out on your couch, if, you know, things like that, they're not going to flag you for. So you don't really need to worry about that. I know for me, the first time they did the home study, I deep cleaned the entire house and I probably didn't even need to. They just kind of walked through and they're like, okay, you're good. They actually said that my house was a lot cleaner than most houses, and I was really surprised because I had young kids, and young kids are not clean. And as you're cleaning up one mess, they're making another. So it's just this ongoing cycle of never having a clean house. And I'm okay with that because if I were to keep my house that level of clean all the time, I'd be doing nothing but cleaning. And I want to be a parent, not a maid. So I'm okay with that. But if you're the type of person that feels like you need to have a clean house all the time, if somebody's going to be walking through, maybe you should hire a maid if that's something that you can afford. But you will have to put some safety things in. We had to have plug covers and all the plugs, even the ones that they couldn't really reach, which I thought was a little bit silly, like the kitchen ones that are really far back that no kid can really get to. You still have to put plug covers in there. And then you need a fire extinguisher. In some states, they require you to have like this fire escape thing where it like hooks up to your window and it's like a slide to get out of your house, and that can be expensive, just a heads up. And then you need baby gates. Even if you're taking teenagers, you still have to have a baby gate. If you have guns, you have to have those locked up, basically to an extent where there's no purpose in having guns for self-defense, because it will take you half an hour to get to your guns. That varies in states too, about what level they want you. Like, we had to have our ammo locked in separate cases from our guns, and then we had to have the keys hidden. And that was for our safety too. So I do understand it, but it is a pain. Like, if anybody broke into our house, it would be a lot safer to just go for something sharp instead of a gun, because that would take way too long. And imagine when you're nervous and shaky trying to get to a gun that's like super locked. I would recommend getting a fingerprint locking mechanism. Those are a lot faster and a lot safer. We just couldn't afford that at the time. But if you're well off, please get the fingerprint ones. Then you need a car that's big enough to accommodate all the kids, or two cars. And it has to be a good working car, because you have to drive a lot as a foster parent, and they don't appreciate your car breaking down, and they don't really have a lot of tolerance for it. They will examine your life to some extent. They'll ask very personal questions about your marriage, about your family, about your religion, about everything that is day-to-day for you. They do ask about your relationship, and both spouses have to be completely on board. They usually can read it pretty quick if one spouse is like, I don't really want to do this, but my wife wanted to, so I'm gonna do it, because otherwise she'll just keep pestering me forever. They'll be able to pick up on if you're both really passionate about it, and both of you really do need to be passionate about it, because this job is really hard with two people. To have to do that all by yourself and not have the support of your spouse, it would fall back on the kids, and that's not fair. So both of you really need to be completely in it, which is why both of you have to take the classes, both of you have to have background checks, both of you do have to get fingerprinted, both of you have to be interviewed. They asked me a lot of questions about my religion, and I feel like she kind of went off script for that for a little while, because she was just really interested in things that I believe. She hadn't really heard that much about my religion before, so she asked me a lot of questions, and she kept saying, like, I'm sorry to be asking you this stuff, and I was like, no, it's fine. I don't mind answering questions like that. But you do have to kind of make accommodations. If you're super religious, you might get a kid that doesn't want anything to do with your religion, and it's really important that you don't try to force that. on them. You might have to take them with you to church. I let the kids listen to something on headphones. They can keep it down. I didn't make them wear nice Sunday dress. I don't make them learn about my church. I do invite them. Like, I'll say something like, hey, we're gonna do scripture study if you want to come. But I don't make them do that because I just think it's just so hard on them. Like, they've lost everything that they know, and then they go to this new family, and just imagine if they walking through the door into a new place, and they're like, okay, here's your new family, here's your new room, here's your new religion, here's your new school. That's too much stuff all at once, and they're not going to be receptive to that. If I really know what I know, and I do, then I can trust them to figure it out for themselves if they're ready, when they're ready, if they're ever going to. I don't need to be the person that forces that into their heart and minds. I pray for them constantly. I don't pray for them to necessarily even believe in the religion. I just pray for them to be safe. I pray for them to be happy, and I pray for them to be successful. If you do get a kid that's religious, just be aware that there are differences, and even just within Christianity, there's so many different beliefs, and it's good to be tolerant of that and kind of figure out where they're at, figure out where they land on that scale. Because, you know, there's kids whose files say that they're Christian, and then they get there and they're like, man, that's just my mom. My mom just said I'm Christian, so I'm Christian. You know, there's different levels of belief that they might have. So it's really important to be culturally accepting of where they're at when they come to you. And I'm not saying you have to stop your religious routines. I would say that as long as they're not being disruptive to your religious things, then they should kind of be left alone in that. Because of my beliefs, I want them to know how happy it could make them. And that's a desire that I have. It's natural, and I can't just get rid of that instantly, but I'm definitely not going to make them participate in anything religious. We do, however, pray at the dinner table. And that one, I just say, if you're not interested, you don't have to bow your head. You don't have to participate. We just ask that you're kind of quiet while we say the prayer, just to be respectful of everybody. And then if I had like a kid that prayed differently, like let's say they were Muslim or let's say they were Jewish, I would probably research what they would do, and then we'd have a Christian prayer and then have a Jewish prayer. That's something that they will ask you about in your interview if you're willing to tolerate a religion outside of your own, if you're willing to take them to their church, if you're willing to support their religion. There was this family, I love hearing about this, there was this family who was atheist. And they were strongly atheist, and they adopted a sibling group of 11, and those 11 kids were strongly Christian. And so instead of being like, well, we don't go to church, so we're not going, every week they got those kids ready, they got them dressed in their Sunday best, and they took them to church every single week. And they learned about the gospel that they knew, they learned about their church, they learned about their beliefs. And they were gung-ho, like, they just dove in and supported those kids. And if those people are going to support them in their religion, we can do that for the kids that we get to. It's already hard enough that they're, everything that they're going through, we don't need to shove our beliefs into their heads right at the very beginning. We can be there to answer questions if they have them, but we don't need to force them. And I will definitely go into that in another episode. The reason why I brought that up in this one is because I wanted to explain that the caseworkers will verify with you that you're willing to let other religions into your home, if you're willing to take kids of all religions, if you're willing to support that. That's something that is a requirement of being a foster parent. And there's ways to work it out. You don't have to give up your religion to be a foster parent. If anything, I think that being a foster parent can really strengthen your beliefs if you allow it to. So they'll ask you other questions about jobs, about all kinds of things. They'll ask you for references. I think we did family, and because I hadn't worked in so long, I think I asked one of my friends, my husband's military buddy's wife, to do it. I think maybe a couple friends, because, you know, I'd been a stay-at-home mom for a long time. There was just no point in having a reference. We had to get support from my husband's command, but that's a military thing. The whole process of becoming a foster parent probably takes about 6 months for just the classes and home study and getting everything set up, and then usually you don't get a placement for about anywhere between a month to a year after you're certified and licensed. And that depends on your preferences, what you're willing to take. We wanted teens And, you know, they kept saying things like, there's so many teens, open your home and you'll be taking all these placements and all of these things. So it made us really nervous because we didn't get a placement for like 2 months. And we were kind of like, we're a military family. If you want us to take a placement, we got to get going because we're going to have to move and that'll require us to disrupt. And so they did give us a placement when we bugged them. Sometimes you have to be the squeaky wheel. I don't know why they were like withholding placements because I know there were kids that needed homes. I don't understand it. I think they were like waiting for this opportune case of like, we should throw someone easy at them first. We were prepared to take like lots of varying kids and they just wouldn't even like trust us to take the kids. It was kind of frustrating, but it could take a while. If you want an infant or ages 0 to 3, you're probably looking at a good year before you will get a placement. If you're open to all ages, 0 to 18, you'll probably get a placement like the day you get licensed. Especially if you've fostered previously or there's any kind of experience in your life or if you're kinship, they move things along pretty quick for that. You do have to bug them if you are serious about it or if you're on a time crunch, like if you're military or if you have to move for some reason. Otherwise, I just recommend being patient. You might as well enjoy your life pre-fostering while you can. I would just be prepared for that to take a long time. Don't get anxious. It's okay. They will give you a placement unless you have reason to be anxious. I just wanted to briefly talk about this. I'm going to have to go in depth about this eventually, but foster parents' goal is to reunify the children to their biological parents. That is something that everybody needs to know long before they even look into being foster parents. The goal is reunification, not adoption. Adoption is what happens if reunification is not possible. And for that to not be possible, they have to give adequate time for the biological parents to fix their life, basically. They have to have time. Let's say that they're sentenced to 4 years in jail. Well, 4 years in jail means that they have 4 years to get their life together and then they could potentially get their kids back. And that means that you'll have their kids for 4 years. That seems like a really long time, but that's how some of these cases go. Some of these cases are 9 years. Some of these cases are 6 months. You never really know how long they're going to last, but the goal is always reunification until the day that the rights are signed away by the biological parents or forced away by the court. They are not available for adoption, and adoption is not their track, and adoption should not be your goal as a foster parent. And there's lots of reasoning behind that. There's lots of psychological studies that show that reunification is what's best for the kid. They are trying to do what's best for the kid. It's also hard because they come up with these laws that are just kind of generalized and they don't go case by case. And that's why it's so hard sometimes to be a foster parent, because there are cases where it doesn't make sense for reunification to happen, and it will. And then there's other cases where they should be reunified and the parents are adoption happy and they kind of try to take those kids away and drag the bios under the bus, and that's not good for the kids either. Everybody needs to be doing what's best for the kids, not what's best for you. If you can't go into this supporting biological parents, do not become a foster parent. The only way that I can see that working is if you plan to adopt available teenagers or kids with disabilities. And I mean severe disabilities, like they cannot walk or talk, or they might be terminal. And there are some parents that take terminal kids, and that's just amazing. But if you cannot support reunification, don't do it. Just stay away. But there are ways that you can support reunification. Even if it doesn't come naturally to you, you can change. You can change your mindset. You can learn about the background of these parents. You can become supportive. So if you're the type of person that wants to help humanity as a whole, not just your one individual kid that you're going to claim as your own and try to make yours instantly, there's definitely ways that you can become a foster parent. So I think that there's ways that everybody could become a foster parent, unless there's like certain charges or things like that that get in the way that you can't change. But for the most part, there is a way. Where there's a will, there is a way to become a foster parent. But you do need to do it appropriately and in the right way. And a great way to do that is start listening to some former foster youth. And I will be getting those interviews up, I promise. It might take me a long time, but I will get them up. so that you can start listening and learning some of those concepts. The last thing that I wanted to talk about as far as foster care basics go is just plan on this basically consuming your entire heart and life and everything as a foster parent, because it will. These kids take over your heart, they become everything to you, and then one day they're just gone. And that's something that's really hard, and you have to be prepared to just do what's best for them. And yeah, it sucks. It's really hard sometimes, but it's not about you, it's about the kids. Prepare yourself to treat this as if it is a part to full-time job. It interrupts basically everything, but it is also very worth it. You'll spend lots of time driving in a car, taking kids to visitation. You'll spend lots of time going to pick up kids who get in trouble at school. You'll spend lots of time talking to these kids about the same concepts over and over and over. You'll spend lots of time giving consequences. You'll spend lots of time being yelled at. You'll spend lots of time being treated like you are the worst person ever. You'll spend lots of time working through your own pride issues. You'll spend lots of time going to therapy. You'll spend lots of time trying to work with your spouse because they're hurting. You'll spend lots of time working with these kids, suffering with them, suffering through their grief. It is worth it though. If this is something that your heart is pulling towards, please become a foster parent. Yeah, it's hard. Yeah, it sucks. It's not about us. It's about the kids. Thank you for listening. I will continue posting more episodes, hopefully in the near future. I'm sorry. I'm taking forever. I know. Please leave me more emails, more comments, more reviews. And thank you for your continued support, even though I know I'm kind of failing at this. I can say this. I will try to get an episode out every month. My original goal was every week, so maybe if I have time, I'll do every week. But for now, my only goal really is to get one out once a month. So please just hang in there with me and tune in next time to You Will See.